All rise in the courtroom and to those listening on stream, for the dishonorable badger is entering the scene. Apparently doing this as a day job simply was not enough, so let your jaws drop to the floor, 'cause we can't make this stuff up. Welcome back to the Legal Funhouse. We put the fun in dysfunctional. It's crazy in the Legal Funhouse, but weirdly educational. But every single one is remarkably true. One of them went to law school and is more than qualified to talk about the strangest cases from the strangest people alive. And the friend that he brought along barely passed eighth grade, whose legal experience lies within parking in the fire lane. Welcome back to the Legal Funhouse. We're just as confused as you. It's finally time for the Legal Funhouse, and without further ado, every single one is remarkably true. It's Boozy's Legal Funhouse. It's Boozy's Legal Funhouse. It's Boozy's Legal Funhouse. It's Boozy's Legal Funhouse.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Boozy's Legal Funhouse. I am your host, Boozy. We are peeking out my mic already. Fuck it. We're doing it live, and as we all know, if I fuck it up, it stays in.
Penis!
Nailed it.
There you go.
Hold on.
Bop. Bop.
I love the fact this is episode 29. It is just Alkali saying bop, 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 bop into the mic to get the level set. All right, the levels are set. We're no longer peeking it out.
I love that you tried to hide the fact that you just did the same thing as me, but with a sentence beforehand. You tremendous ass.
To anybody listening to this later, this is a new one for us. We are actually recording this live at Furthermore 2023 in beautiful, not Washington, D.C., but just outside of Washington, D.C. Oh, my God, have you seen the hotel rates in D.C.? We can't afford that. The name of this episode, episode 29, Friendship is Magic. With me today, we have our certified legal layman, Alkaline.
Hello, everyone.
And an audience of 1, 2, 3, 4 people.
People at apparently a strip club. Yeah. Hold on. This isn't video recorded. Recording live from a strip club. There we go. See, I'm increasing the value of your show.
Yes, I love it.
Chicken strips.
Chicken strips? What kind of strip club do you go to, and may I join you?
That's all about the food.
It's all you about skinny little shit. What?
Remember, if we fuck it up, it stays in. With the exception of one episode, we have never done a take two on this. And the only reason we did a take two that one time is my mic died in the middle of take one. And I'm like, this is just going to be way too much effort splicing them together. So we're 30 minutes in, and now we're back to zero.
So why did you start over? Laziness. Got it.
Alkali, it is time.
Sounds good.
It is time, it is time, it is time. Do you know?
Hold on, it is definitely not time. You have a disclaimer that you need
to
do.
Oh my God.
Holy shit, dude.
Every fucking time. Actually, no, this is the first time I've forgotten the disclaimer.
It is the first time you've forgotten the disclaimer.
And this is the time we have an audience.
Right?
Like, this is the time that will definitely get me sued if I don't do the fucking
thing. Yes! And as funny as I would find that, sitting in the audience of the trial, like, I knew that one! Yeah, Your Honor, I'll leave.
Yeah, that's malpractice. We covered that in episode 24. You know what he did then? The disclaimer.
Disclaimer.
Please remember, Boozy's Legal Funhouse is an educational, informational, and hopefully entertaining discussion of the law and legal topics. While I am an attorney, I am not your attorney, and nothing that you will hear here today could be taken as legal advice. I am not your lawyer. The way I would become your lawyer if I accepted private clients, which I do not, is you come to my office, tell me your legal issue, I agree to represent you, you sign an engagement letter, and pay me a retainer of my choosing. Please do not PayPal me a dollar and say I'm your attorney. And then we have an attorney-client relationship. It's like the relationship you had with your ex, except I'm taking all of your money, not just half of it. With that said, no attorney-client relationship exists here. There is no attorney-client privilege. If you do happen to say anything and you're in our audience, remember, it is not privilege. What the fuck is wrong with you? There are like 30 other people in this goddamn room.
And we just said we don't edit the show.
That said and done, now it is time.
Now it is time.
Now it is time. Every episode we bring out for our certified legal layman some legal news. Some legal news. So, do you remember the episode I told you about Donald Trump's lawyers getting sanctioned?
Yeah, very much so.
To a large amount of money?
I love the large amount of money.
Yeah. Well, now one of Donald Trump's lawyers has been censored.
Censored?
Yeah. Not censored as in, like, you know, first, yeah, not that. Not like, not black bar over the face. Censored.
Black bar somewhere else?
C-E-N-S-U-R-E-D, which with you, I know how you spell shit, so you may think that's the same thing, but it's not.
That's
okay? It's not.
Oh, they're the ping machine on a submarine, a sensor. Got it.
No, that's a sonar.
Oh.
A censure is a reprimand.
Oh.
It's a very public hand slapping for attorneys. There are different
levels.
Why
don't you call it a reprimand? Censor already has a definition. Multiple, in fact.
Well, because if it wasn't confusing, would it be law?
That's the best answer you have ever given me.
Jenna Ellis, who you may recognize from CNN and Newsmax and Fox News. No, wait, we're furries. None of us watch Fox News or Newsmax.
Ironically enough.
Actually, no, there are some who do, but that guy got escorted out of the convention center yesterday.
Fox News is on Fox.
If you're the person who was escorted out of the convention center at this live recording, and you're listening to this, and you're offended by me making a joke out of it, good. Jenna Ellis, in the State Bar of Georgia, has been censured.
Censured. I drank too much last night to say that word.
I know.
Continue.
I was
yeah, I know.
For promoting lies about the election, she has admitted that those were not truthful statements.
Shocking!
And further, that they led to discontent and an erosion of faith in the electoral system. It is 2023. It has taken her 3 years to own up to this. And she still didn't admit they were all lies, just 10 specific statements. She didn't comment on whether the rest of them were lies. However, her misrepresentations of having affidavits from witnesses of voter intimidation and manipulated ballots made on Mornings with Maria on Fox Business.
There you go. That's where I want to lose my career. Mornings with Maria.
That with all those states referring to Nevada, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and Georgia combined, they knew the election was stolen from President Trump, and we can prove that on Spicer & Co. on Newsmax.
Oh, God.
President Trump was right. There was widespread fraud in this election. That statement was made on Mornings with Maria on Fox. Like, her and Maria are just coordinating an effort to destroy her career. That's...
You know what? I appreciate someone's doing it at least.
And the statement that there were over 500,000 fraudulent votes cast in Arizona made on Justice with Judge Jeanine on the Fox News Network.
Not Jeanine Garofalo, right?
No, that is a completely different show. Justice with Jeanine Garofalo.
That's not Fox News. That's Otter Stories.
This is actually, believe it or not, this is Jenna Ellis's first case of attorney discipline.
Really? Shit. Somebody who made those lies the first time they lied. You can kind of tell this is the first time they lied. Oh. These were kind of out there.
Yeah, like, no, they were really out there. Like, Trump's lawyers have had historically just the most amazing backgrounds. Yeah, there's Rudy Giuliani. You know, old Melton Rudy. When people say he's an attorney, he passed the bar exam, I'll go, yeah, so did Rudy.
Holy shit. That does not mean
as much as you think. Lynn Wood was Trump's attorney in Georgia who lost his goddamn mind. Like, went from being a very well-respected defamation attorney to being the guy who called his law partners over to his house to talk to him at 3 in the morning.
God.
So.
Now, that's if you called him over to a FurCon at 3 in the morning, and then you don't remember the rest.
Oh, the next part of legal news is, you know, AI is a big thing.
AI is a huge thing. Chatbot is scary.
Yeah, and people think AI is taking over what, art?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's becoming art. It's taking over things for writers.
Very much taking over things for... We gave it a prompt.
And it's trying to take over things for lawyers.
Wait, what?
Yeah. Yeah. Josh Browder started a company called Do Not Pay that he has billed as the world's first robot lawyer.
How's it going?
Well, Catherine Tucson, who is a paralegal for several lawyers I actually know.
Oh, God.
Went in with Akiva Cohen, Mike Dunsford. Those are her employers. Those are the people she works for. These are very well-known attorneys.
Okay.
Went in, bought an account, and requested that Do Not Pay write things like complaints and demand letters. The one document she got back was boilerplate and did not apply whatsoever. The other two documents were never generated. When she brought this up to Josh Browder, who has been on literally every fucking website talking about his new lawyer, he suspended her account and then spent the next 3 weeks on Twitter watching Catherine's tweets and editing his terms of service whenever she brought up a new violation.
Oh, my God.
So this is going to be the new state provided.
And how did this all start? Josh Browder tweeted out that Do Not Pay would be handling a traffic ticket in court for someone and said that it was so advanced it even subpoenaed the police officer. That means nothing to you, except you know who the only witness for the state is on a traffic ticket?
That would be the police officer.
You know what happens if they don't show up?
You get to get off without the ticket.
You know what happens when you subpoena the police officer?
They must show up.
Why on God's green earth would the defense subpoena the prosecution's only witness?
Because chatbot is wrong and right in all the wrong ways.
Catherine Tucson then obtained the services of J. Remy Green, another wonderful attorney, who filed a lawsuit against Do Not Pay for the return of the $35 fee.
Please tell me that the website is letting the bot defend them.
That's the fun part we don't know.
Ah! I want to know so bad.
If you look up this lawsuit, it is filed in New York. It's a request for pre-complaint discovery, which is we want to see shit to determine if we have a cause of action because we think we have reasonable grounds to bring a cause of action against them. In one of the footnotes, Ms. Tucson's lawyer explicitly says, to the extent they want to use their robot lawyer, we're good with that.
Like shooting binary fish in a barrel.
There has been no response as to whether or not they use it. However,
have they tried turning it off and turning it back on again? Then maybe we'll get a response.
However, Mr. Browder has talked to several attorneys, most of them with state disciplinary boards, who are telling him what you are doing is the unauthorized practice of law. It's not only unethical, it's illegal. And if you move forward with it, you could face up to 6 months in jail, which he took as, the lawyers are silencing me.
With their law thingamajig, I talked to my bot. He said it was fine.
Listen, my opinion's very simple. If you have what you are billing as the best robot lawyer in the world, better than any other attorney, the threats of prosecution should not scare you.
I totally agree. In fact, we should test this. Hey, everyone, who wants to file a lawsuit? No. We're going to sue a robot. Furries are making history today with our class action beep bop nope lawsuit.
All I'm seeing in my head, though, when it's like the robot lawyer has its day in court, I'm seeing that episode of Futurama where Bender acts as the fucking defense attorney.
I adore that episode.
Right?
My God. Oh. Dude. That's because we've used Chatbot. It actually really helps. If you guys have ever been to Whose Line Is It Anyway, my improv show, I generate some of the prompts for that show using Chatbot because I've been doing this for a decade and I'm starting to repeat myself. So then we're like, oh, well, we'll try something else. Give me a recipe for mac and cheese in the style of Dr. Seuss, and the son of a bitch nailed it. Also, there was lettuce in there, so, you know, wrong in all the wrong ways, but still, there was a recipe for mac and cheese.
I'm not too familiar with AI. I don't like it. I don't use it that much. However, recently I decided to test the limits of AI.
Oh?
Because I wanted AI to present me with an argument that Baloo from the Jungle Book was not only bisexual, but the lover of King Louie. I am happy to report that the chatbot refused to give me that prompt. Not because it was like, what the fuck is wrong with you, but because it violated its ethical norms to speculate on the sexuality of a fictional bear and monkey without there being some canon source material indicating they were indeed lovers.
So what you're saying is Chat AI understands the law better than Lawbot 9000.
This is how I know, though, that they did not prepare the chatbot for lawyers. Because when it said it would be offensive and unethical and rely on stereotypes, my response was, are you telling me you cannot do this hypothesis? You cannot make this hypothetical argument without relying on stereotypes? I certainly can, but it would not be ethical because we don't know what the creators are. Assume Walt Disney and Rudyard Kipling are okay with it. There is nothing in the canon source material. So you're telling me without the canon source material, you can't extrapolate from minor instances without using... I certainly can. I'm a very advanced AI. However, I'm like, so do that.
You argued with a robot!
The best part was after I was like, all right, well, if you can, then I want you to give me an argument in a respectful manner without relying on stereotypes, assuming that both Rudyard Kipling and Walter Elias Disney would not have a problem with it, that Baloo and King Louie from the Jungle Book are bisexual lovers. The bot started to give it to me. And it got down like 4 or 5 paragraphs. Like, I'm like, okay, we're locked and loaded now. Like, this is coming way too quick. And then it gets to the word, and they're open, and it just blinks at me for 5 minutes. I resubmit. It's like, I'm sorry, this is not ethically. I'm like, ah, they got me. So to test it, I asked them to do the same thing with Robin Hood and Little John from the 1973 Walt Disney animated classic Robin Hood. It gave me an answer. Like, it gave me the argument with examples. I'm like, now do the same thing for Baloo and King Louie. I'm sorry, but we can't. I'm like, God damn it!
Chatbot knows Disney is going to sue.
What I love is it was ready for Robin Hood. It was like, no, yeah, no, we've done this one before.
Not the first.
We have yet. Yeah, we have. And it was like it was trying to guilt me. It's like, well, that story is really about a little boy. I'm like, but I'm not asking about the little boy. I'm asking about Bear Daddy.
I'm asking about Bear
Daddy. This is a law podcast, and we have veered from talking about legal discipline to talking about our King Louie and Baloo fucking.
Which I think now is the time to bring it up. We're starting a new podcast, the King Louie and Blue. Okay, I'm done.
Bluey?
Which one of you is
witch? I'm a
witch. Oh. Which one of you is witch? Oh, honey, we're both bears.
I'm more like a D&D ooze. I'm just kind of a Morpheus.
So, last time, we talked about the evolution of mental anguish damages.
That was cool.
Using a series of cases about corpses.
So many corpses.
Just ungodly.
And BBs. Don't forget ungodly. BBs.
Like we had children's bodies getting dug up and thrown into marshes over $20.
We had people dissolving and going into the mausoleum underneath them. Underneath that. Underneath that. Underneath that.
Don't forget duct taping the casket. Sure.
Oh, you gotta duct tape the casket.
Yeah, it's the only way to make sure you got that good seal.
Mental right? anguish.
Well, this time we're going to step away from rotting human corpses.
Say, all right, we're done with rotting humans.
We are going to talk about something that is very appropriate for our audience.
Perfect.
We are going to talk about pets.
Aww.
Little puppers.
This is a legal story
Tiny
about pets?
Tiny kitties.
Oh, God.
Oh, I know this.
Okay.
People become very attached to their pets.
Very much so.
Very. You ever see that, like, the 60-year-old woman, like, oh, my fur... Doing it alive.
Doing it alive.
Oh, my fur babies. Look at the pictures of it. It's like 90 fucking cats and like one little eye sticking out of the pile of fur. You're like, oh, when she dies, they're eating her.
That's how they show their love.
You know, pets are more than just something to have. They are your companions. They are your friends. How many people have pets?
Animal pets.
You can't see it. That's a lot of hands. And everyone loves their pets, right? Of the people who have pets, how many people have those pets with a boyfriend or a girlfriend or a significant other of some sort? Like two hands, three hands, four hands, five hands. All right, so we got the five people who aren't single in here. The rest of you, it's not really a podcast. This is speed dating. Go. People tend to get pets together, and they enjoy having those pets together, and then they break up.
Oh,
right? And what happens when they break up? You're both attached to the pet.
I swear to Christ, if this is about King Solomon, a dog, I'm going to kill you.
Now, that's exactly how we do things. So put the Yorkie on the table and bring me the sword.
The Commonwealth is confusing. That's when you smoke a joint, and whichever one of you lasts longer takes the dog.
Well, it's interesting you should say joint custody of the pet.
Really?
It is very interesting you should say that, because pets have a special legal status.
What's that?
Well, it's the same status as your car.
Well, broken and sometimes on fire?
No, I said... I said your car, not your mental health.
That's not a fire, honey.
Broken and sometimes on fire, Steen.
There you go.
Let's go to the Pennsylvania case of Price v. Brown. This is from the Supreme Court of Pennsylvania in 1996. The citation for anybody listening who knows how to find that is Price v. Brown. 680 A2D 1149 PA 1996.
Did I just catch that we are at your Pennsylvania Supreme Court for an animal case?
Oh, yeah.
Awesome. All right.
Miss Price had a bulldog.
Oh.
Miss Price's bulldog was the love of her life. Oh. She adored it. It was an English bulldog. We don't have the name. They didn't give us the name.
They didn't supply the name of the dog? Sometimes lawyers make mistakes.
Yeah, you know, every now and again. Every now and again.
Give him a name.
Miss Price's bulldog had a prolapsed urethra.
Prolapsed
urethra.
That's a new one.
Oh.
Miss Price took her lovely bulldog with a prolapsed urethra to her local vet, a Miss Nancy Brown.
Okay.
For a surgery. Now, after the surgery to fix the prolapsed urethra, Dr. Brown had to go to 88 miles an hour and go back to the future. Yep.
What the fuck?
It took you a moment, though.
It did. Wait a minute.
Like, the look on his face, there's like a moment of, what the fuck? Like, in her DeLorean filled with cocaine.
Oh, my favorite kind of DeLorean.
Just instead of Einie, she just stole Miss Price's bulldog.
And it made it to the Supreme Court. You know, the law isn't always perfect.
Now, Dr. Brown performed the surgery. Miss Price, who could not bear to be without her dog, came to the veterinary hospital to visit the English bulldog that we're going to call Rover from now on. It's Rover. Cute little Rover, English bulldog, had surgery for a prolapsed urethra. Mommy comes to visit, looks in. Dr. Brown says, we're going to have to keep her here overnight. We just need to keep an eye on her. But everything went fine. She's going to be okay. Miss Price sees the bulldog and sees while she is there that the dog appeared to be panting strenuously and was groggy, at which point she turned to a member of the veterinary clinic staff and said, you all need to monitor my dog for the next 24 hours. Like, don't leave her alone. And some unidentified member of the staff said, of course. And then, like all responsible veterinary hospitals, locked the fuck up and went home.
Yeah.
Overnight, Rover died. So, the doctor failed to have somebody watch Rover showing signs of distress, correct?
She did say it, and I know that means a lot.
So, Miss Price filed a lawsuit against the veterinary hospital. What do you think she alleged in that lawsuit?
They had made a verbal agreement that they would be monitoring the dog for 24 hours, and there was no one in the facility.
Let me ask, if you go to a hospital,
all right, say
you're in the hospital, and they're supposed to monitor you for 24 hours for complications, and they fuck off to the titty bar.
Respect.
What do you think that cause of action would be?
That would be, you've told me this one before, the not providing the proper care.
Hold on.
Are you talking about breach of contract?
No, motherfucker.
Is this somehow a breach of contract? Like, I would be so pissed.
Not providing the proper care. Are you talking about breach of contract? No, medical malpractice. Yeah. Malpractice.
Wait a minute.
Mal, from the Latin meaning bad, practice, from the Latin meaning, I don't fucking know, but bad practice.
All right. So fine, we're doing real medical shit now. Whoop-de-goddamn-do.
So do you think that Miss Price filed a malpractice suit?
It sounds like she filed a malpractice
suit. She did not. She filed a bailment suit.
What the hell's a bailment suit?
A bailment suit is an area of law where you give property to somebody for a specific purpose, and then they return it back to you in the same condition you've done it. And while they are in possession of it, for that specific purpose, they are the bailee, you are the bailor. You are not giving them your property right. You are putting it into their care for a specific purpose, and they are bound to return it to you when that purpose has been fulfilled in the condition that you expect.
Okay.
All right.
Now, is that the proper way to deal with an animal hardship like this?
Why would it not be?
I don't know, because I'm a furry and I consider animals more than just animal, more than property, I guess.
Like, I mean, a typical bailment suit is going to be like, I give UPS a package with a computer. I am the bailor, they are the bailee. Say I'm shipping it to myself. For the reason that UPS has it, they are a bailee to transport that property, which is still my property, from point A to point B and then re-deliver it to me. If in that possession, they take a hammer and destroy my property, that's a bailment suit. It has been destroyed in there.
I agree with all that, but now change the word box to baby. That sounds like it should go to a different court.
Well, box to baby is going to be a tort. That's a personal injury. Like, if I give UPS my baby, I'm a horrible
tort
parent.
Was the word I was looking for. Flights were expensive that month.
We already have a word for when the UPS driver takes a hammer and bashes in a baby's skull.
Wednesday?
It's called murder.
I can never get that one right.
But if you add the word fur in front of baby, it's now a fur baby, not a baby.
Fur baby.
How does that change it?
So I'm assuming you're telling me that the government, or the legally, animals are considered property.
In all 50 states, an animal is no different than the microphone on this table.
No,
it is a piece
really?
Of personal property.
Oh. All 50?
All 50.
Even Hawaii?
Even Hawaii.
Oh, yeah, no. In D.C., they're granted rights and elected president. Don't worry about that.
We had a jackass in the White House for 4 years, yes.
Okay, all right. So she couldn't file the malpractice. She had to fire because it is property.
Well, we'll get to that because the court in this actually comes back and says, you could have filed a malpractice. You could have filed a veterinary malpractice suit.
So they're considered property until you get to this specific lawsuit? Boozy, no robot will ever be able to do your job. Trust me.
Well, what is a malpractice suit?
Dr. Dunn fucked up.
It's a negligence suit.
Fair enough. Okay.
It's negligence. And in a negligence suit, as we've covered in the past, yep. Who has to prove every element of negligence? Who has to prove duty of care? Who has to prove breach of the duty of care? Who has to prove injury? And who has to prove damages?
I believe it was the plaintiff, the person suing.
The plaintiff, the person suing. In a bailment suit, they still have to prove the elements. But you know what they have to prove?
What?
I gave you my property for a specific purpose, and you did not give it back to me. You destroyed it.
Oh, shit. Oh, so now they're behind that eight ball. They need to, oh, my God.
And once you've established that, I gave you my property for a specific purpose, and instead of returning it to me having fulfilled that purpose, it is gone. You've met your burden. Now the burden shifts.
The defense?
Then? From the defendant to either show that it was out of their control that it was destroyed, or there were no damages, or they did not exceed the purpose.
So it's kind of good that she went with a bailment instead of malpractice.
Well, I mean, like, yes.
Said the snake.
Look, this is very common in almost every episode. You're like, oh no, okay, I see it. So she obviously went. I'm like,
there's no robot that's doing your job. Nothing makes sense.
First, I want to point out veterinary malpractice is a real thing in Pennsylvania.
Really?
You know how long it's been a real thing in Pennsylvania?
How long?
Since Price v. Brown in 1996. Because this is the case that established it can be used as a cause of action.
Awesome.
Which is really weird because they actually did it in what we call dicta. It had nothing to do with the holding. The Supreme Court was just like, yeah, we'll let you sue a vet for fucking up for malpractice. We'll let you do that. That's okay. You know, it's got nothing to do with this case, but we're going to go ahead and say, all right.
We can just knock that one out.
However, on the bailment case, the property case,
all right.
How do you think the Supreme Court found? Remember these facts. Miss Price dropped off her bulldog. She gave the bulldog to the vet for the purpose of the surgery. She asked the vet to monitor the bulldog upon signs of distress. The vet did not. The bulldog died.
The only one that gets me is you said she told them monitor 24/7, and a unnamed employee said yes. So because of that one, I'm still going to go with Supreme Court sided with the... Oh, shit.
The purpose of the surgery.
The best part about the audio format is nobody listening right now can see my face when he's saying this. Because he's going through this, and he looks over, and I'm just looking off into the middle distance from him. And he's like, ah, fuck.
Avoid eye contact. Avoid eye contact. This is funny and stupid. Thanks. What?
The Supreme Court of Pennsylvania actually found against her.
You're shitting me.
You know why?
Why?
What was the purpose that she gave the dog to the vet for?
Urethral surgery. Don't tell me they were pissed off.
No. What did the vet do?
Performed the surgery. Oh, God.
She gave the dog to the vet for the purpose of performing a surgery to correct a prolapsed urethra. The vet performed that surgery successfully and corrected it. They fulfilled the purpose of the bailment.
Oh, shit! So it doesn't matter that they had to leave it with them.
Any cause of action after the fulfilling of the purpose that the bailment was granted should have sounded in negligence. It did not. The court held for the vet.
Oh, puppy!
Now, that case highlights the principle of pets are property at law. Because you can't bring a bailment action for a person. If your vet takes you into custody and refuses to release you after a surgery on you, I've seen your insurance. This is a plausible fucking course of events.
Very much so. Also, I know my kinks. I need to find a vet.
And then refuses to release you, that is unlawful confinement. That's a tort.
That's a tort. Okay.
If your doctor fucks up your surgery,
that's malpractice.
That is negligence or wrongful death.
I don't know if I'm going to be suing after I experience wrongful death.
Yeah, but somebody can.
Yeah, the robot.
Yeah, there you go.
I'll sign up tomorrow. Whoever kills me, sue the shit out of them.
Those are all causes of action. First, bailments specifically for property.
Okay.
Now, you have to understand that principle to understand the next principle we're going to talk about, because this is we're still in Pennsylvania.
Of course we are. Welcome home.
This case is DeSantis v. Pritchard.
Okay.
DeSantis v. Pritchard is a decision of the Pennsylvania Superior Court. We went over that.
Yep.
We have the trial court. We have the intermediate appellate courts. We have the Supreme Court.
Right.
All right. So the trial court
gets
appealed to either the Commonwealth Court.
Right.
Or the Superior Court.
Right.
Depending on whether it's the government, because Pennsylvania's government said, fuck you, we get our own appeal court.
Still my favorite thing ever.
Or the Superior Court, and then those get appealed up to the Pennsylvania Supreme Court.
Got it.
All right. This case is DeSantis v. Pritchard. It's a 2002 decision of the Pennsylvania Superior Court. Mr. DeSantis, Anthony DeSantis.
Anthony.
Had a relationship with Linda Hurley Pritchard.
Okay.
In about 1991, 1990, they met each other. They moved in together.
Oh.
They got a dog.
Oh.
Their dog's name was Barney. We have the dog's
name. We have the dog's name this time. You can see the law advance over the years. Now they give us the puppy's name.
They get Barney about. They don't say what breed Barney is, though. Like, that one actually pisses me off a little. The last case, we had an English bulldog that we had to name ourselves. This case, we have Barney. And I'm just imagining Barney being a tiny little Jack Russell Terrier, right? Like, admit it, you hear the word Barney, you're like, oh, that's a tiny dog.
Little one.
Like, now we're going to find out Barney's like a fucking mastiff. Wouldn't it be great if Barney was an English bulldog?
Oh my God, it's always...
We don't hate animals, just English bulldogs.
This one was a dinosaur. All right.
They get Barney 2 months before they get married in 1991. They get married. They're together in loving bliss for 9 years. They get a divorce.
Oh.
When they get a divorce, they actually have an amicable divorce. This is one of those, they don't have any kids. They figured out the division of the property. There's all this. They're perfectly fine. It's a marriage that didn't work out. But they're going to just kind of say, okay, it didn't work, we're done.
Okay.
They draw up their own settlement agreement. And in the settlement agreement, they say, Barney will live with Linda, but we are going to meet halfway, and Anthony will get time with Barney. They're going to exchange Barney, because over the last 9 years and 2 months, Barney has become a part of both their lives.
Okay, this is very amicable.
Essentially, what they do is they put in this agreement that, you know, they're going to share custody of Barney.
That sounds like an actually very amicable breakup. Okay.
And they have provisions in that agreement. You know, if Linda moves, we're going to figure out this new custody thing with Barney. And if we can't agree, the court's going to decide what a good schedule and terms would be on that.
Well, it sounds like everything worked out on this one, and there's no twist. This has been thank you for a nice one.
It sounds
for
like
once.
That, except number one, they never made that agreement. Even though they put it on the record, they never made it part of the divorce decree, so it wasn't actually made an order of the court. It's just an agreement. It's very typical in divorce cases when you come to a property settlement agreement.
Okay.
That when you write the divorce decree, you say, and it incorporates all the terms of this agreement. That gives the agreement the force of a court order.
Okay.
So now if you violate the agreement, you're actually violating a court order and contempt proceedings can be brought.
And you're saying they did not do that?
They did not do that. So all they have is a contract.
Okay.
They have an agreement. Agreements are enforceable in court. You know, they're just the only special step in making it a part of the court order is it becomes easier for the court to enforce it.
Okay.
All right. Linda decides she is tired of living, and I believe...
That was a bad place to end that sentence.
I believe they were in Lehigh County at the time.
Okay.
Which, nobody in here is familiar with Pennsylvania, but there's... Let me give you people listening at home to an audio podcast a visual representation of... All right, there's Philly over here, then there's Lehigh over here. Then down here is a county called Bucks.
For those of you at home, they're waving their hands around like an idiot, and the audience is pointing and laughing. Continue.
The thing to remember is they both lived in Lehigh County at that time, so driving to meet halfway was really like 15 minutes most.
Okay.
For both of them, all right? But Linda doesn't want to live in Lehigh anymore, and having been to Allentown, Billy Joel famously wrote a song about how nice Allentown is. Having been to Allentown, I can't fucking say I blame Linda. Linda wants to move to Bucks County. Bucks County is about an hour and a half to 2 hours away from Lehigh County. Okay. Pennsylvania's big. It doesn't look like it on a map. Pennsylvania's big.
Yeah.
This now significantly changes the driving distance. Because to meet halfway, one of them has to start in Lehigh, the other one has to start in Bucks, and they'll meet in the middle in Berks County. You don't want to be in Berks County. It's a good drive, and Linda says, you know what, I'm not driving that far to exchange a fucking dog. In the agreement, it says, Barney is mine, so I've decided you don't get to see Barney anymore.
Bitch!
Now, we didn't hear anything about Barney's gender.
That was good.
Anthony is upset. Anthony has been deprived of Barney. But Anthony has a portion of the agreement that says, and if we disagree, the court will decide. Anthony files a lawsuit asking the court to decide the shared custody of Barney the dog.
Oh, boy.
Linda immediately files what we call preliminary objections. One of these preliminary objections is demurrer.
Oh, demurrer?
Keeping in mind your audience, what do you think demurrer is? Is it what comes before or after the orgy?
All of the above.
Demurrer is a fancy legal term for saying, fuck you, no.
So before the orgy, got it.
It is, in law, a complaint must state the facts. We've covered that. It has to go through, it has to state the cause of action, correct?
Right.
Has to say, this is why I'm entitled to relief. And if it doesn't do that, it's not a sufficient complaint. And a demurrer is a fancy way of saying, you haven't stated a cause of action, your lawsuit should be dismissed.
Okay, all right.
Now, in this matter, though, what Anthony says is everything I've just told you. We got the dog 2 months before we got married. We got divorced in 2000. Prior to getting divorced, we entered into a binding agreement with each other where she would keep Barney and I would have visitation and we would meet halfway. And if we have a dispute, we would ask the court to handle it. That sounds like a cause of action for breach of contract, doesn't it?
It does.
Sounds a lot like one, right?
Absolutely.
So why then did the trial court sustain Linda's demurrer?
Because they didn't actually file the sentence in there that let all of the... No?
All that does, all incorporating does, is make it an order of the court rather than just a binding
contract. Okay, so it would have made it easier on the court.
Right.
Is it simply because that the line earlier in the contract said that she owned the dog?
100%.
Because the dog is fucking property.
Because the dog is property. The
court my God.
Came back into Sactus and said, no, the dog's hers. You both admit the dog is hers. You both say that she has the ownership of the dog. We can't order her in a divorce proceeding, in a marital contract, to share custody of a dog because, and this is a quote, it would be like ordering joint custody of a table or a lamp.
God damn.
when they asked her, or when they asked the court, well, you need to decide it, the court said, no. The only valid portion of your agreement is the one dividing ownership of the dog to Linda. Barney is Linda's dog. Everything else is void. It's unenforceable. You can't ask us to enforce a custody agreement for property. To put it in other terms, how many people have bought a car while they're in a relationship? Maybe you're both on the car. Maybe you are both on the car, but when you get divorced, the court's not going to say, Alkali, you get the car Monday, Tuesday, and Thursday, but on Wednesday, Friday, and Saturday, Zanny gets the car, and on Sunday, the car goes to Grandma.
It's bridge day, I get it.
That's not going to happen. It's going to cause more strife, and the touchstone, the key to family law is minimize the strife. Enter orders that make it less likely that the court will interfere. So the court here came back and said, we sympathize. We know you love Barney. You know, we know you love Barney, and we know Barney loves you.
I hate you. I hate you so much right now.
But we are not going to enter an order dividing custody of Barney because Barney is property, in the eyes of the law. This actually got appealed up to the Pennsylvania Supreme Court.
Really? This one made it to the Supreme Court as well?
And the Supreme Court granted review.
Okay.
And they briefed the case, and they argued the case, and then the Supreme Court issued a decision. And do you know what the Supreme Court decided?
That all the lower courts were right?
No, the Supreme Court said we shouldn't have even granted the appeal on this. It's such a matter of black-letter law, so we're dismissing it as improvidently granted.
Oh, my God. Well, they tried. Oh, puppy.
Animals are property at law. They're property. In all 50 states, an animal is property.
All 50 states decided that individually, because that's the way you've explained law to me. Most of the states are doing it as they please until it reaches supreme.
Yes and no, because all of our law is derived from the English common law.
Wait, hold on. In English common law, were animals property?
Animals were property.
That far back?
Yeah. Huh. With the exception of, like, in ecclesiastical courts.
Right. I remember those.
Because, as we explained before, for a huge portion of English history, there were the common law courts, and that's what we think of as a court. That's the actual court system.
Right.
And then there were ecclesiastical courts, and that was Jesus' court. That was the church court.
Dealt a lot with the corpses,
and
apparently.
And funnily enough, you know who handled divorces in old English common law?
Don't say the church.
The church court. Marriages were not civil. They were matters of religion.
Oh, God.
Which is funny because here we have a divorce court under our legal system saying, okay, animals are property, but ecclesiastical courts didn't always consider animals property.
Ecclesiastical courts would actually do it like a kid with
No, they wouldn't divide custody, but they sure as fuck would try the animal for murder.
That took a dark turn!
There are cases in history of ecclesiastical courts prosecuting cows, dogs, pigs, and rats for murder.
Rats.
Rats.
They put a rat on the stand.
Actually, that case, I can't remember the exact name of it, but it was a town served a summons by posting the town square to all of the rats in the town to come and stand before the court for murder and destruction.
Did they get the big rat who makes all the rules?
And do you know what happened in that case?
Please say that the rats swarmed the church.
The rats won.
Oh my God, they used lawyer bot.
The rats won because the rats lawyer. The rats had a lawyer. Argued that the courts of God could not punish them for being as he made them, and it won.
That is a damn good lawyer.
I just, yeah, exactly. So it's like, you were born this way. I'm like, exactly. fucking Lady Gaga kicking in the doors of the French Catholic Church. Like a little trail of rats dancing behind her on the way up to the witness stand. Now, I know that sounds very grim. There were some other factors the Pennsylvania Supreme Court did use in De Sanctis.
Okay.
I lied a little earlier. I said they bought the dog. They were living together. They did not buy the dog.
Who bought the dog?
She bought the dog.
Okay.
Linda bought Barney while they were living together 2 months before. Linda's name was on the ownership paperwork. Linda was the one registered with the
okay.
bag. All that went into the concept of who owns it. You know, whose property is the dog, really? And it sounds depressing as hell when you think about that. Because think about your pet. Think about the pets that you may have. And think about if you were to break up with your significant other and they were to take that pet from you and never let you see it again.
Then I'd have a different kind of civil lawsuit against me.
Right.
What was the one you said earlier? Murder.
Murder, yes. Yeah. Definitely civil.
Yeah, very civil. It would have been a very civil murder. Good day. Bang! How do you do?
Did you go on trial, a French lawyer? He was made a murderer.
He was a...
Can you...
Smiled the whole time.
Can you hold it against him? And you see, now you got me going on animal law. We'll have to cover this again because there's like a huge thing on animal law in medieval Europe. And, like, cases of pigs being tried for witchcraft, that's an interesting one.
Dude, save these for Halloween. That's amazing.
And the concept of animals as property, you find it all throughout the law. You actually find it in civil forfeiture, asset forfeiture cases, where the lawsuit is the government versus the piece of property. And there are lawsuits that are like, like Michael Vick, the dog-fighting football player, his dogs were seized. Through civil asset forfeiture, there was a lawsuit on that, and it was like the state of Georgia versus 42 pit bulls. So,
now I remember you telling me once that when you have to seize property back in your old job, when you have to seize property, and somebody was being a butt about it and storing all of their assets under their wife's name, didn't you say that the first thing you look at is do they have a dog? Yeah,
do they have it when I. When I would do that, and we would levy and execute on it, and people would be hiding assets, and we'd show up with the sheriff, and they'd insist that none of the property in the house was theirs. If a dog walked into the room, and I go, oh, that's a cute dog. Is it yours? They go, oh, yeah, it's my dog. And I go, sheriff, tag the dog. And you would be amazed how quickly those assets reappeared when you told them, we are going to sell your dog at sheriff's sale.
That's amazing.
I will do a one-quarter credit bid, and I got a new puppy. Would I ever actually take the dog to shit? No.
Of course not. But that's a great threat.
But it was a great way to make people suddenly admit that they had money somewhere that they were hiding. Now, I know that's depressing. Here is the good news.
Oh?
Here is the good news. But normally, when we do custody cases, the way we decide who the children go with, not the animal children, the normal children, is the court does what's called the best interest analysis. They look at 14 to 16 factors and decide from there who is more appropriate for custody, where is it in the best interest of the child to live. All right? And we never do that for dogs. We don't do that for animals in the vast majority of states. I say the vast majority of states because while animals are property in all 50 states, Alaska has broken the mold with property division in divorce.
Really?
Alaska, in 2017, put a law on the books in their divorce property distribution directing courts that where pets are involved to conduct a best interest analysis, much like we do for children.
No shit.
Other states, such as New York, have begun to have judicial rulings leaning towards that as well. And in today's case, De Sanctis, the son of Mr. De Sanctis's appellate lawyer who has sadly passed on, very recently wrote an article for the Pennsylvania Lawyer and has begun speaking on and promoting that Pennsylvania change what we call the De Sanctis rule, that courts cannot determine the ownership of pets in a divorce like children, pushing for Pennsylvania to adopt, either judicially or by statute, guidelines allowing for courts to apply the best interest analysis.
That's wonderful. I love hearing that.
So.
The way you looked at me, I thought you were about to say, and they burnt down those courts. Couldn't happen.
Yeah, no, I mean, like, it may take a while to happen because, like, Pennsylvania has a law called the dog law. No the shit. That's the dog law. That specifically says animals are property. Dogs are property. So they would have to chase things. But the law is evolving in that way.
That's amazing.
And that is the case of DeSantis v. Pritchard and pets as property in a divorce.
Go Alaska.
We have a question.
So if that law, or at least that judicial review, were to pass in Pennsylvania, how long would that extend any given divorce proceeding?
They're already extended. I personally represented people in a divorce where they agreed on the custody of their children but could not agree on the ownership of the dog.
Oh, my God.
I'm sure that made the kids feel great. Like, mom and dad figured out which one of us went where before they... But fucking Barney. And that actually resolved when the dog died. It dragged out so long, the dog actually died, rendering the question of ownership of the dog moot.
Case dismissed.
So, how does animal abuse work if animals are just property?
I drive to their house and beat the shit out of them. I'm 6'8". This is a deterrent.
The law does not deny. Yeah, the law does not deny that animals deserve protection of the law because they cannot protect themselves. The law does recognize that animals are, in effect, sentient creatures, that they have feelings, emotions, and they're capable of feeling pain. We do not do that under kind of a property thing. We do it more as the court has to be able to regulate that conduct because it's for the welfare. Think about it this way, because I know what you're getting at, which is it's my property. I can do whatever the fuck I want to, right?
Well, no. But
you're worried about that.
It's my property. I can do it. No, I'm not thinking that you're going home like with a fucking cattle prod. Come here, Rover.
Boozy said I could.
I get where you're coming from, though, which is where's the legal disconnect? If it's just property, how can we have animal abuse laws because we protect people's rights to do what they want with their property? But you can't burn down your own house. It's your property, but you can't burn down your own house. Why?
Hold on.
Well, that would be insurance fraud.
Not only insurance
you
fraud.
You can't burn down your own house.
Not only insurance fraud, you can't set your own house on fire. It's a crime. It's arson. Doesn't matter whether there's insurance in it or not. If you burn down your own house, it's arson. Why not? Endangerment. You are creating a risk to society. We kind of take the same thing with animal abuse. You can't mistreat an animal. That creates a societal risk. Maybe not like a real one of burning down a neighborhood, but certainly a moral one, an ethical one. Think about how many things we outlaw simply because we go, yeah, that's not right. You shouldn't do that. Not because it hurts somebody. And in this case, we would say it doesn't hurt a person, it hurts property. But okay, even if you're doing that, has anyone ever known a good person who kicks a dog?
No.
No, you see somebody kick a dog, you're like, that motherfucker's killing someone. Like, he's got bodies in the fucking bed. I want to hit him with my car. And I'm not sure a jury will convict me.
And then I'll burn down his house, which is apparently illegal.
So animal abuse is more the law's way of stepping in and saying, yes, they're property, but it doesn't mean you get to treat them however you want because we as a society enforce certain standards. And one of those standards is you don't get to beat your pets.
Brutal.
There should be a clause for that called, like, the Earl Law or something.
Actually, there are named laws throughout the United States specifically regarding animal abuse. And that is, like, that's not how you go down in history. You don't want to be, like, what's that? That's the Bob Law. What's the Bob Law say? You can't beat your dog. Bob sounds like he was an asshole. Additionally, and you do see this a lot in law when it comes to things, of the law taking a position of, we're going to step in to protect people and things that cannot protect themselves that need it. I know we said we weren't going to talk about corpses, but...
God damn it!
Corpses.
Every time!
Corpses are a good example. We say corpses are quasi-property. And why do we say that? Because once somebody dies, nobody owns your body.
Yeah, you thought you said one entity does.
Well, yes. And that entity now is the court.
Yeah.
You are in, from the moment you die, you are in custodia legis. You are in the custody of the court. There are people with rights regarding your body. Your next of kin have a right to determine where you're going to be interred, how your remains will be preserved, to give a headstone. There may be property rights relating to your gravesite. Your next of kin may have property rights in your gravesite. What they don't have they may have property rights in the clothes you are buried in and the jewelry you are buried with. What they do not have is any right to order the disinterment of your body or do anything with your body that would violate law or public policy, because your body is in custodia legis. It is in the protection of the court from the moment you die. That's why, even if a relative says, I want to go dig up grandma and get the wedding ring, they don't just get to go to the graveyard. They have to ask the court for permission to do that. I don't see any other hands up, so at this point, Alkali?
Boozy?
I believe this has been a successful episode.
I think this has been a wonderful episode.
For those listening at home, if you want to support Boozy's Legal Funhouse, you can do it over at patreon.com/lawyersandliquor. Please also go over and see Alkali. Alkali does comedy shit on their channel all the time.
You can find us on twitch.tv, Alkali, and Zanny. We stream 4 times a week. Join us Monday nights. We do Jackbox and don't talk about corpses for half the time.
Not unless I'm there.
Okay, if you're there, then it's at least 3/4 of the time, but that's fine.
Just look, you just can't. I love me a good court. Oh, God, I can't say that.
Spoozy! Of corpse you can! I love your booze.
Folks, this has been episode 29 of Boozy's Legal Funhouse. I'm Boozy with my certified legal layman, Alkali, saying thank you furthermore for letting us do this shit here, and you have a wonderful rest of your day.
Good night, everybody.